Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt and this is another podcast for The Diplomat and the Beyond the Mekong series. With me today is Virginia Bones and Andreas Rubio, who together make up Geography of the Moon, a sensational, extremely well-received band that's done very, very well across the region. How are we?
We're good.
Great.
Cambodia is one of your homes.
Yeah, it is.
Hence we're here.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know your work, I'm not a musical writer, but
that's okay.
Give us your best shtick.
Right. So we play alternative music, indie music, post-punk, with some sort of blues influences, and we do a lot of improvisation, so it gets a little psychedelic from time to time. What do you think?
We call it death pop.
So yeah.
Right. This mix we call it. Sometimes people ask us, "What do you do when you're in a rush?"
Yeah.
So what kind of music you play? Death pop. And then we leave them like that. And then, so maybe we create a new
genre.
Yeah. I mean, we even if you listen to our new album, which is called Aberdeen Hiroshima. It's a mix of all of these genres and a mix of all our experiences. And
well, I've been to quite a few of your gigs, and there's a lot of different elements of other music in there. You know, blues, punk. I love the surf guitar riffs.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're performing, you're also arranging your songs for what's to come next.
Some of them, yeah.
And the audience is the test.
Yep. Well, yes and no. I mean, we play what we feel. So I guess you could say the audience is a test. Like, but we never really thought about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, okay, we're going to play a gig. We do play some songs. There are songs that we've got arranged already, and we'll be playing them. You know, we know how to play them. So it's like, okay, let's play that song. It's recorded. We know how to do it. And sometimes we'll start playing some song and like deviate into something else, or just start playing something new altogether and then see where that leads.
Right.
So
how did you two come together? My background reading says UK 2016.
Yep.
You're French.
I am.
Andreas is Scottish Italian.
Yeah.
A good Glaswegian lad.
Aye.
With a hell of an Italian accent.
Indeed.
how did you pull it together? And you're married?
We are,
yes.
Right.
We are. So we met in 2016. I was head chef in a really fancy restaurant / venue.
And you were running events there.
And I was running one event a month, calling the weirdest, and also same, like, kind of non-band, and I was always looking for an opener or someone else to play and sing gig. And I was looking for a pianist, because we had a great baby grand piano in the venue.
Nice, actually.
So I was like, I started looking for a pianist playing, like, sort of, you know, indie tunes. And someone gave me Virginia's contact.
Started from there.
Yeah, she sent me some music. I was highly impressed. I was like, I couldn't believe that's, you know, it's a recording. I want to see you live.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of days later, I went to see a rehearsal. It was amazing. And then I kind of start playing with her band.
Because I just started a band with somebody
else. So she started a band with other people.
And we were looking for more people to play with us.
They asked me to play. I played. And then we played that gig together, like a week after, 2 weeks after. It's great.
One quick step back, because you mentioned you were working as a chef, but both of you trained as musicians, and you studied to be a conductor, which I kind of find kind of wild. And when I see the way you work the drums and all the other instruments, record while you're playing a gig and then play that back while you're still playing that gig, it's quite something.
Yeah, you need to keep, I mean, I studied classical music for years, so the metronome is part of my, is in my brain, so that's the most important thing, is to be tight. Then the rest is just practice, you know, I think.
And imagination as well. I mean,
yeah, of course.
You know, yeah, but you have to put all this together.
Mm.
It's because it's practice, but it's also knowing what you want to do with it.
Also, we both do everything DIY, you know, like we do it, we record everything, we compose everything. So it's, I don't know, the way we play sometimes live is...
It's very free.
It's very free, but also it's related to how it's going to come out in the record, if it's going to come out the record. Maybe that song would never... You saw us playing the other day. We did a couple of new songs.
Yesterday
as well. We did some, probably you would never hear those songs again, you know. Maybe the lyrics.
Maybe.
Some lyrics here and there. Maybe some riffs in there. Yeah. Some songs have changed so much.
I mean, the way you work, it's... reminds me of Frank Zappa, in a sense, you know, sort of...
Thank you.
It's just that ability to get up and play music, create music, as opposed to offering a rendition of your latest album or, you know, trying to impress the crowds kind of thing. It's all part of the... it's a different experience.
I usually when we play, I want to impress myself and Virginia, actually.
Right.
Then the rest is kind of, I mean... It's for example, it's great when you play a gig. Like in Cambodia, we played in Phnom Penh. Half of the people that came to see us were friends. The other half, I didn't know them. It's great. And I don't know, when I started playing, the sound was great. We were having a great alchemy on stage. I was like, the rest could be empty or full of, could be 1,000 people or zero. I was having fun, you know. So
right.
Well, it's more like, you know, you go on a trip with the music and you start playing and see where it takes you, and that's going to be the gig.
And on top of that, when there's people dancing and singing your song back, that's great.
It's nice.
happens
a
lot.
But we don't really plan like what we're going to do before we start.
We never even do a set list.
No, we do sometimes.
Sometimes.
We've started to be a bit more organized.
After 1,000 gig,
started
doing?
Yeah, because sometimes you think, what do we do now? But usually we'd be like, okay, we don't have a set list. We just get on stage and play, and because there's only two of us, it'd be like, oh, let's play this, or let's jump for a bit, and you know, yeah.
You play all sorts of venues. And
yep.
Last night I saw you play at the opening of the Dina Chan
Gallery. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, with the art, that was really good, actually.
And sometimes you've got big venues and small venues.
Yep.
Do you? But you do play a lot of concerts. So you've toured Japan, India.
Yep.
Cambodia, you consider one of your homes.
Yeah.
I mean, you're everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, we play Vietnam, we play Nepal, we play Germany,
Thailand.
France, UK, Thailand as well.
I think that's it so far.
Yes.
And you're getting a lot of airplay as well. I understand Japan and Thailand.
Yeah, in Europe and the States.
Yeah, and Belgium lately.
Belgium,
for some
France. We get
and,
there.
And Poland.
Because we run everything by ourselves, so we don't have like a marketing team. We are the marketing team.
We
so,
do everything.
But we have a lot of contacts, so. And we work as well, not just for us, but we work for other people. Like, we run a label called Teen Freaks. I run these labels since ever, like since I was a teenager, to organize gigs and making them, like, trying to treat everybody equally. Then all the people, all the artists that are trying to get paid and et cetera, et cetera. So we run our own label, our own booking agency, our own marketing.
Logistics.
So it takes a little bit more time when you do a release to get heard everywhere. But the radios are helping us a lot, actually. So we go play on BBC. There is some people like Robert Carlyle, the actor. Every time we do a release, he shares
it
on Twitter.
He
loves us.
That's where I wanted to go next, because the trick question is, how do you stand out in today's market in the 21st century? I was reading a story about a song that came out in 1984, and it was the biggest selling song in 1984. The name of the song doesn't matter. The point of the story was that on that one day when that song came out, 40 years later, more music is released in one day than all of 1984.
Yes.
It's just extraordinary the amount of music that is being thrown out there.
Well,
into
the internet has democratized, you know, releasing music. You don't need big labels anymore.
Right.
Anyone can put anything online,
The point with the internet, of course, is that everyone can have an opinion, and that includes all
that
the idiots.
Well,
you
could literally go and like write or publish anything online right now.
Hmm.
Anything.
Sure, but so, how do you stand out? You've actually done a very good job of that, and what you were saying about the marketing and how hard you work. How do you stand out in this crowd today? The market's so crowded.
So I don't know how much we do stand out, but we do stand out in some smaller scenes, I guess, like here, because we play a lot, so a lot of people get to see our gigs. We do record and release records. No, wait, we do record.
It's fine.
Yeah. Record and release works. Yeah. So there's that as well. So there's the radios. Obviously, you have to be on all the socials. I think the only one we don't do is TikTok, because just none of us can be bothered to deal with.
Yeah.
No, it's just too much. And yeah, just we're out there. I mean, playing, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 gigs a week. Not every week, but almost. So there's that, and we've traveled a lot.
In different places in the world. Yeah, that's the thing.
We traveled. We meet people, and I guess maybe some of the songs are good, so people pick up on them. Hopefully,
well, they are.
No, you can see as well even in Japan, we are getting bigger in the sub-underground scene, which is amazing. And some other people we met in Japan, Western, and they were saying to me, how did you get in that scene? It's like, how? I know all of them. Like,
talk to people.
Like, all the indie sub. We just talked a lot of people. Went to Japan already many times.
Three times. Yeah.
But for longer periods. So we get to know people and we get to... So every country we go, we just go there and just get deep into it, meet a lot of people. If we like it, we eventually stay as long as we can. Or go back. And everywhere we go, we try to meet the cool people of the country. You know, we try our best.
Well, we often do, because as musicians, you get a different welcome and you'll meet other musicians. And this is how... And that opens doors as well, because those musicians know other musicians. So that's already like... You know, you meet someone and then the whole scene will sort of be like open to you. You know, you'll have to work it and be good enough, of course, but...
But the emphasis is actually on playing live as opposed to relying on the, self-marketing on the internet.
It's both. It's both. You have to do both. I think we should maybe do more marketing, because playing all these gigs is also exhausting. But I think because we're doing both and we travel, meeting all these people and then being online as well, that you have two different sort of sources of where you could potentially find us.
Well, I was reading how you struggled during lockdown and COVID, as many people did. And
isolation,
And survived, but it was sort of personally frustrating.
It was tough.
You're in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Do you have a grand plan, or you... kind of still recovering from COVID, in that a lot of people came out of that period, and you've got to play catch up. You've got to do things, or are you just sort of like, the show's back on the road, and we'll keep it on the road?
Do you mean mentally or work wise?
Both.
Okay.
Mentally, I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm sure. No.
Work wise, catch up. I'm mentally actually this year. I consider myself semi-normal, which is great. But work wise. COVID,
COVID was an opportunity for us to stop somewhere, have time to press a record and distribute it ourselves.
Marketed that crazy was, and we listened to like...
So it was a good time for...
We go played on BBC Music that year, like that year and a half on COVID.
Yeah, because we had
a lot of people think, but which agency did you use? We said, there's no agency, man. You just listen to the radio all day and you get to know the presenter.
Mm.
And then, hustle. And then you might get a lot of,
Rejection
and a lot of... But we had a lot of good... we got played from 6 different radio presenters on BBC, which was great.
6,
We worked hard. I mean, literally, I was listening
and
to the...
BBC
to
Scotland as well.
BBC Scotland first.
Right.
Yeah.
And then BBC 6. We got played on Iggy Pop's show. We got played on Tom Robinson's show.
But no, we did use all the time we had during COVID to do things we don't have time to do when we're touring constantly. So that was good. Mentally, it was really hard though.
Yeah.
It was for me, there was no inspiration. I wrote one or two songs towards the end of the lockdown. I wrote The Unraveling the last month or something like that. And then, yeah, we didn't really write that much, but we did a lot of
yesterday.
Admin and talking to people and yeah, pressing a record took it took 6 months to press that record, but yeah, we distributed it, so that was as well
sold out,
and that was also a good way, I think, to get noticed by some people who are really into vinyl records, especially in the UK. There's a lot of collectors. So I think a lot of people discovered us there because of that. So that was actually a step up. But yeah, mentally it was really hard. But I think we're okay now.
Get in there.
Judging by the crowds and the reception you've had since you've been back in Cambodia, you're doing quite well.
Yeah. Try to keep ourselves, you know, good. Doing okay, yeah.
How much time are you spending in the studio these days, recording, now that you're out of COVID, you're on the road all the time?
No,
I mean, it's a difficult thing to manage.
We have our own mobile studio.
Right.
Well, we take our things with us.
So the last album, it's been like recorded and mixed in the last 12 months. Mm.
Here, there and everywhere.
Yeah, so we started recording, like one of the songs, which is the last track, is the only song I wrote in 1.5 years during COVID.
Mm.
Is dedicated to Virginia.
I did read somewhere that, were you complaining that you only wrote 4 songs during COVID?
Two to five. We wrote very little.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had no...
As soon as we left the UK, we went traveling, we went to France, and then we went to Italy to cut it, my old cat, still alive, by the way. It's almost 20 years old. He's a great cat. It's called Spritz, like the cocktail. And we went there to cut the cat, as my friend Dave and Ila were getting married. Went there,
we
and
went
in
on a holiday.
4 days, we wrote an EP.
We wrote four songs.
Like 4 songs, one song a day. And, you know, even
and
last night, we wrote more songs last night than during COVID, you know.
Right. And this was last night at the at the gallery where they had the artist paints while you're performing.
Yeah.
And it was quite a unique type of event.
Yeah, art jam. We've done that before.
I did that 20 years ago in Berlin.
But we've done it in London.
Berlin's so far ahead of the rest of us.
And then, we've done it in London as well.
Yeah, we did in London on... We were
painters.
Doing it on... We used to live on a boat in London. So we were in the Bohemian boaters community, artists, whatever.
Okay.
So we were doing some live painting and gigs on Village Batty. Do you remember?
Yeah, no, but I remember that you did that. We did stuff with...
With Anna, yeah.
So, I mean, I guess this comes back to, where does your inspiration come from for your songs? And if you can spend 2 years in perhaps not 2 years, but a year locked down, 4 walls, nothing happens, but then you get out and you're traveling and you're meeting people and catching up with your long lost cat and your friends who are getting married, and all of a sudden you've got 4 songs.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the songs were also sort of alchemizing the experience of coming out of the isolation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot of frustration in that EP, but. I forgot the rest of the question.
No, that's all right. Where to next? I think what I'm driving at is that COVID knocked a couple of years out of everybody.
Yeah.
It takes a year or two to catch up to where you want to be.
Yeah.
And now you're standing on the platform. You're doing very well in airplay across this part of the world and in Europe and the States. Where are you heading over the next 12 months, 2 years?
We are... going to be in Cambodia for a while. We've got a tour lined up. We're going to be here until
mid-February.
Then we have a festival in Thailand in February. And it's kind of unclear after that. But then we're going back to Japan again.
Mm-hmm.
And then we may go to Europe. But that's we can't. That's in progress. We don't really.
Yeah, we go to Europe. We're waiting for some. We already had some gigs offer, but it's not acceptable. Some conditions are not acceptable, and we go back to Europe just to visit family and come back to Asia.
Okay. Why Cambodia? Why? What's the whole attraction here in Phnom Penh for you? You've done very well here, and you've got a hell of a following.
Yeah. People are really into it. Well, there's that, and the fact that the scene. I think because the scene is quite small, but it's very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really good for us because we can get gigs and people let us play whatever we want and it works out. It's nice to be, it's good to be able to do that. That's why Cambodia, I mean, there is a lot of music and it's good for musicians.
It's been a favourite hangout for quite a few over the years. As a conductor, how many instruments do you play?
A few.
How many? Come on.
Five, four.
You can touch any instrument and pretty much play it.
Well, this is what scares me. Yeah. As a conductor,
I'm a terrible drummer, but I can play for 2 hours.
You're good.
I didn't study mainly I'm a guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
I can play bass, play drums.
But anything with strings,
yes,
you'll pick up and you'll be able to play.
Noise with
right, I mean, look, I can play guitar dreadfully. I mean, I know 6 or 7 chords. I can put
a
together
start.
It is a start, but I'm still bad. It's not very good at all. But you guys are... high-end musicians, very well trained, very well played. It's not something that you advertise.
We practice. I've been learning sitar now for a while.
Which is a traditional Cambodian instrument. For the audience's sake, it's long strings.
Came as a gift from a friend.
Yep.
It's Bangladeshi sitar. It's been donated in Cambodia by an American friend.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas.
Okay,
I know Thomas Hoffmeyer.
Yes, so he was selling. He moved back to the States, I guess.
Yeah, they've got. He and his wife have. Yeah. His parents are getting old.
So they moved there, and then he sold a lot of instruments, and then he was like, "I told him before you sell this, I want to try it." He has an electric sitar. Went to try it. He said to me, "You're not going to make any sound out of it." I made good sound out of it. He said to me, "Okay, you can have it."
Okay.
So I just,
good job.
Yeah, no, it's a great instrument. You know?
Beautiful instrument
that is like a little bit of scales to learn, like 70 or 72 scales to learn.
Only?
Yes, my only. God. Indian music is very, very different. But we went to India, we met top range musicians there.
Mm.
We were really lucky. We've been introduced in the, we met some really good musicians there.
Yep.
Like world touring. So we got really India impressed us, I guess. I mean, impressed me very much musically.
Right, and that's having more of an impact on the songs that you write now and the way you.
No, more on my anxiety combat skills. I mean, I learned how not to have panic attacks in India. Mm. You know, you can have panic attacks in India because
that is true. Just living in India will.
A lot of people. I love the country. I love a lot of people that are there, but it's tough. You know, like every time I need to. You have too much problems in your head. So just go to India for 2 weeks. There's no problems in your head.
They've all gone. They'll evaporate pretty quickly with the heat, the dust, and the madness in the towns.
Yeah, it's great. So
But you've also played with some quite famous Indian musicians while you were there.
We performed in an art gallery in Pondicherry.
Yeah, so that's related to Auroville.
Yeah, the owner of this art gallery is related to Auroville, which is a big, if you know, you know.
No, you're referring to Auroville?
Yes.
Yes, no, I've been there.
We've been invited to play in Pondicherry, and it's a really prestigious gallery. And then we played for a really small audience, but they were like,
we played twice, though. And
yeah, we played twice in a really old garden. It's a beautiful experience, but the art represented of the province and the city. And then the owner of the gallery said to me, "You must play with this guy." I was like, "No, we're leaving tomorrow." I said, "No, tomorrow you're playing with this guy. You're staying one more night here." I was like, "Okay." And then he showed me the Twitter account, and I was like, look, I was like, am I playing with this guy for real? I said, yeah. And then
it turned out to be a really
It's the son, the son of Mr. Vinayak Ram, which is like a top 10 singers in India. Which, you know.
And of course, Pondicherry is the old colonial bastions, and Auroville is steeped in religious, I wouldn't say history, because it's actually a recent build back in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, but it's it has its own significance. It's an extraordinary place.
It's really incredible, but, you know, it took us 3 days to get out of the house because it was they were celebrating Holi.
Yeah, we went during Holi. It was
just to get out of the guest house, so guest house venue, to go to take a coffee, which is like from here to where we were before. Yep. It's 45 minutes, man.
Yeah.
To do 20 meters, it took 45 minutes.
Welcome to India.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it was quite shocking, but great experience musically.
Given the range of gigs you play, I mean, like small galleries, big venues, what are your favorite concerts? I mean, you've been around long enough. How many gigs have you played? 1,000?
We kind of lost count, but it's over 1,000.
We've reached over 1,000 by now. Yeah.
Maybe last month we reached 1,000 gigs over 8 years, including 1.5 years without gigs because of COVID.
What are the most memorable?
For me, Paris.
Oh, that was really good.
We played at l'International midweek. Even Cambodian Space Project played there.
Right.
Like 10 years ago, 12 years ago. But it's different location, actually. But we played there.
That was a really
It was a Wednesday night. The owners were like, we're not going to be... It's going to be okay night.
Place was full.
Place was rammed.
Yeah.
Gig downstairs, because it was divided in three rooms. Downstairs, it was the gig room. Upstairs, it was four screens showing the gig downstairs. And outside, speakers.
It's very well organized.
It was really organized. It was full of people. Full of and dance. We played in front of 99.9 French strangers. It was Virginia's mom. It was great.
That was great.
One of the only parents that managed to see us live was her mom. So that's why it was special for me as well. It was very special. And the rest was like maybe a couple of friends met in Cambodia. Met Tokyo this year.
Yep.
Shibuya. We played Tokyo for Halloween, which was quite...
Yeah, that was devastating.
And we had some girls front row singing our songs. So I was like, oh, that's nice. And we didn't know these people. So that's even...
The crowds in big venues don't seem to be the thing anymore. It's sort of...
Actually, it is.
No, look, when you...
It's nice,
when you play in a
I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying that...
Like, compared to kind of venues, imagine Oscars as a...
Oscars is a local music venue.
If you imagine Oscars as it's made with the stage and people, you know, go there for the music.
Right.
But anyway, you go there for the image. It's a proper live club. In Japan, most of the clubs that we played were... proper live club with a crowd in front of you and standing and paying $20 to come and see you, and you know, that's my favorite gigs.
You ever had any problems with I don't know, bad drunks, clientele, people who weren't...
Oh, in Cambodia for sure.
You've probably kicked a few people off the stage.
I kicked people from stage because they wanted to touch her legs, for example.
Yeah, that was...
In Cambodia once.
It's a bit creepy. People
were trying to rub my legs a couple of times for sure.
Freaky.
Yeah,
it's okay, you know, I got long feet.
Sometimes you get people that will come and try to...
Talk to you
and have a conversation while you're singing or playing mid-song, and you think, can't you see I'm doing something right now? But clearly, but they're oblivious to that, which is very strange.
But
it's funny. You think, what? How can't you see? Like, anyway, or people who are drunk and come around with their drinks, and you think, don't spill that on my gear.
Sure.
So, you know, you might kick people away a little bit.
One gig I was at while you were performing, I noticed you had a few issues with the microphones, because in Cambodia, the electrics, none of it's grounded.
Yeah.
And the microphones, they heat up and they spark and they...
Yeah, I did that last...
Yesterday
actually. Yeah, I had to put some...
And
I had
craft
to put my... some shirt around the mic because I kept getting shocks, and last week as well. You have to wear shoes and you know, maybe keep your mic on a stand and try not to touch. Sometimes you can't touch it. Yeah,
just the way it's all changed in that a lot of people playing a lot of small gigs, a lot of venues that aren't built for bands, they're not properly equipped, but you're out there, you've performed over 1,000 times, and now you're getting traction on in Japan and India and right across, actually right across the planet. Are you in South America?
We're trying to. no. Yeah, I think we got some people listening to us in Brazil, which we found on Spotify. We found out yesterday because you can see.
No, we got played on in Mexico in the radio in Radio Ciudad de Mexico, like, which is national radio. We got played.
Yeah, no, but I mean, when you look at the stats on on Spotify, for instance, you see where people are listening to you and. Yeah, Mexico played us on the radio, but there were some people in Brazil, some people in Chile. Yeah. Sometimes it's really random, and you think, how did these people find us? But that's the magic of social media platforms, I guess.
Right. Hashtags.
The magic of hashtags, yeah.
It's taken over.
Yeah, well, you have to learn to navigate that, you know, stuff as well. Yeah. We do that, but it's funny because literally anyone anywhere could find you somehow via, you know, the platforms and internet, and it's really interesting how sometimes you think, oh, I've got somebody listening to me in Frankfurt or like some village in Japan or Canada, or really random places.
No, in Japan, for example, because in Japan there's other social media use. Anyway, we were posting some.
Yeah, but we were there, but we've also.
And there's people coming, doing like 200-300 kilometers with on a train to come and see us. Say, I saw your post. I like post punk. I was like, wow, that's commitment.
Well, we meet friends on Instagram, and they'll come and see us, and we think, you came all this way, like, just because, it's great.
It sounds like you're very much the rock band, post-punk, blues, zapper, surf, make it up as you go along, conductors from the with a hell of a musical background, but you're rewriting the book for how it should be done.
We're just trying to survive by playing music.
You're doing it very well.
Yeah, for musicians these days, I think we stayed independent, and we pretty much managed to live off of it, which is not many musicians can do that. I think most people have jobs,
right?
But we decided to just do that, and our job is to do also everything that supports it. So
your parents are happy?
Yeah, finally, actually, they're fans.
I think so. I mean, I don't know. Our parents are following us.
Yeah, they're following. They're quite like a first reaction on all social media.
Okay, our moms are definitely like fans. You know, they're always like liking all our posts and everything.
And my dad helped us as well pressing the records in 2020. It took me because I always played very
supportive.
He never understood my passage from classical,
right,
jazzy to hardcore punk, and he was like, "What are you doing? Get a real job, you know." And then years later, I met Virginia. We started releasing music, and he was like, "Do you know what?
I actually like this."
I was like, "Really?" I was like, "Yeah." It took me 30 years to, you know. And my dad said, "Oh, well, how can I help?" And it's like, "Look, we're pressing an album, you know, if you want to help." And he helped us, actually. So.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Mum and Dad are happy. You two are happy. And the road is paved with music.
Yeah, we're happy. So,
On that note, look, thanks very much, Andreas Rubio and Virginia Bones, Geography of the Moon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.